Welcome all. Thank you for coming back to our Effed Up True Crime channel or podcast. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any future content on your favorite and latest crimes. Or not even favorite crimes, crimes you haven't heard of. They are my favorite. We all hear about the popular ones, and I do like to learn about others that haven't fully hit the news, especially if they haven't hit the news in my area. Also, don't forget that we have pages on all the popular social media sites, so Insta, Twitter, Tumblr, and especially Facebook. That is where I spend all of my time, all my free time. Most of my time is dedicated to looking up these sick and twisted criminals. But when I do jump onto social media, which isn't as much as it used to be, because this world is a hateful world. For me, the Facebook page is easier to interact with people, and I find it's just easier. It's easier. People can comment, people can message, and I know that you can do that on the other sites, but I don't know. It's just that for me, Facebook just works easier. So make sure you head on over to Effed Up True Crime, EFFED. True crime pages, especially Facebook, and give it a like so that you never miss anything. Or go over to KL Lee Author and shove me a friend request if there is anything you want to send to us. That would be awesome. We'll also be setting up a merch store once this pandemic is over, and they will be listed on our social media sites. We'll also be putting up some giveaways, but those giveaways, the merch will go straight from manufacturer to winner so that we can lessen any handling of these giveaways. Because at the moment, like in Melbourne, Australia, where I live, there's been over 500 new cases of COVID in the last 24 hours alone. And in the last 5 days, we're hitting the 2,000 new case mark. So we've got to be very careful. And we're going to have to make sure that the merch does not get made in Melbourne or New South Wales. And I know that I'm going overboard, but I want to lessen any risk for any of the listeners, because your health is so important to me. So important, because I have a high risk child that is at home, and I know what the dangers can be. So I do not want to be passing dangers on to any of you. So let's get to today's case. It's a case that was brought to me by Robin Ladbrook. I had no idea of this case, so thank you so much, Robin. I am glad you brought this case to my attention, because it's a 3-hour flight to New Zealand. So I don't understand why I didn't hear about it, but maybe there was some stuff going on in my life at the time. But thank you so much for sending that over. So this case actually ripped my heart out. Oh my God, it really, really did. It should never have happened. But we say that about all the cases. It's about a small boy who was so badly brutalized that he did not survive his injuries. At 10 p.m. on August 10th, 2015, the little one was pronounced dead. His name was Moko Rang Ito Harari, and he was just 3 years old. Moko was born in October 2012 to Nicola Dally Packy and Jordan Rang Ito Harari. Nicola had a son and daughter before she gave birth to Moko, so he has two older siblings. When Moko was very little, the eldest child became sick and needed to travel to Auckland for special treatment up at the Starship Hospital. Nicola couldn't have her younger children with her at the hospital, so Moko and his sister went and stayed with Nicola's friend of 15 years, Tanya Shaler, who at the time was a caregiver at Kohango Rio.
Okay, well, I didn't do a police background check and I didn't ask all the social workers what was going on with the mental health. I just made an assumption as knowing her from previous early childhood that she would be safe opposed to putting them into a gang life.
She said they had known each other for 15 years.
We had lunches at the lake. We'd spent, I think, a Christmas together at the lake. Mm-hmm. Shouted them a barbecue, bought presents for her kids.
Nicola Dalipaki said she was desperate to find somewhere for the children because they were not allowed to stay with her in the hospital. She said she was trying to find a better situation for the family and placing the two children with Shayla was a last resort. But Ms. Dalipaki said if the authorities had concerns, they knew where to find her.
They did not once contact the Auckland DHB social workers that work at Starship to gather evidence about me and my background for the investigation. If they had, they would have been notified by the Auckland DHB social workers and Momoko would still be alive.
When Tanya took in Moko, Annie's sister, who cannot be named for legal reasons, she actually had four children of her own, aged between 2 and 7. And at the time, she was living with her partner, David Hayriwa. That's a lot to take on. Why would you take on so much? I did hear that they were getting paid to have Moko and his sister by the government, so that could have had something to do with it. A source told the Herald that David had been in and out of prison for most of his life, but in June 2015, he was once again released and apparently doing very well. For the first 6 weeks, Tanya and Nicola, they stayed in regular contact. Nicola was able to speak to the children, she was able to converse with them. There didn't seem to be any issues whatsoever. None. She was able to have contact and able to reach out at any stage and she'd be able to speak to the kids. But it wasn't until 2 weeks before Moko's death that contact completely ceased. Her phone was off and I couldn't talk to him. Those are signs I should have picked up on, Nicola would later tell TV3's story. Court documents outlined what happened to little Moko and his sister in that 2 weeks leading up to his death. For whatever reason, David and Tanya began to dislike Moko, a three-year-old. A three-year-old child they began to dislike. David would later tell police that he didn't like Moko's ways. And he was angry that the three-year-old took him and Tanya for granted. Both began to assault Moko physically. The degree of severity of the assault only escalated with each of them encouraging one another when beating the child. The violence against Moko was just... it just evolved. It evolved into something unspeakable. Tanya would punch, kick, and slap baby Moko. On one other occasion, one of her children, her own children, Tanya's, was in the house and confessed to police that she actually saw her mother biting Moko multiple times on his face and his arms. The child said that Tanya bit him so hard that his skin would break and he would bleed. David also got into the habit of picking on Moko. He kicked, slapped, and booted the little boy, and sometimes he beat him with his flip-flop. The summary also outlined that David didn't want Moko around him. He didn't like Moko in his presence and would constantly have him in timeout. Timeout for Moko meant being placed in the bathroom where he couldn't reach the handle for hours upon hours by himself without food. It appears that David abused Moko whenever he could, whenever he got the chance. And it was later found that David wasn't the only child abuser in his family. David is the uncle of Benny Hayriwa, a man that killed 4-year-old James Wakaruru. James was beaten for several years before the fatal attack in 1999. Benny was convicted of manslaughter, and at sentencing it emerged that he had already served jail time for beating James when he was just 2 years old. Benny was given a 12-year sentence and he was released in 2010. It was around August 5th, 2015, when David and Tanya began killing Moko, essentially. Tanya stomped repeatedly on his stomach with significant force. Moko groaned, expelling bursts of air as the woman brought her foot down hard again and again. David would later tell police that Moko was losing control of his bowels. They made him sit on paper and plastic because he kept shitting. His words, not mine. At some point around this time, Moko suffered a fatal head injury. It has not been established who of David and Tanya dealt the blow, but it caused swelling on Moko's brain, and combined with his earlier head injuries that were healing and the attack on his abdomen, it just left him with little chance to survive. By August 6th, the day after, it was clear Moko was in trouble. As the week progressed, he became increasingly unwell. He was defecating spontaneously and frequently, unable to control his bowels, a summary said. By Sunday, Moko could barely walk and his face was swelling to the point where he could barely open his eyes. His face began to bruise, consistent with a head injury, and he began to vomit. Moko was left in his bedroom all day that Sunday. He begged for water, and the first time David gave him some, but the rest of his pleas were ignored. After that one cup of water, they ignored the poor little child. Despite all of this, despite that this child was clearly in trouble, David kept abusing the boy. In particular, he kicked Moko in the lower back after he had defecated. Then he wiped the feces on the child's face, the court heard. He then washed Moko with such force that he removed scabs from his body. Moko was screaming in pain and David covered his mouth to silence him. While in the shower, Moko fell and he was barely able to stand up. David could see the boy was getting worse, but did nothing. He dried the boy, put him in a nappy, and put him back in his bedroom. No one did anything to help this little boy. By the next morning, Moko could no longer communicate, and he was barely moving. When his abusers tried to force him to move, the toddler would collapse to the ground. His breathing was labored. His tummy was starting to really get hard from his undiagnosed internal issues. Tanya left the house and took her own kids to school on the Monday. She spent the rest of the morning at home with David and then left the house again just before midday to attend a course. At 2:20 p.m., she got a ride home with a friend and asked to stop at the pharmacy. There, she tried to buy an EpiPen, a device used for injecting a measured dose or doses of epinephrine. Most often, it's used for treatment of anaphylaxis. The pens are carried by severe allergy sufferers. Tanya was told that the pens were not stocked, but that one could be ordered, but she declined and went home. Now, it's not clear, but in my opinion, because I haven't found anything on why she was trying to buy the EpiPen, but as I said, it's my opinion, I believe she thought it would jumpstart the boy's heart. He must have been deteriorated to the point where she knew that he was going to die. Despite people thinking that that could be an answer, you wouldn't believe how many people believed EpiPens could restart a heart. I did a fair bit of research on it over the weekend and I couldn't believe it. But studies have shown that it isn't a treatment for heart stimulation. In the car, Tanya told her best friend that Moko had fallen from a wood pile the day before, but he was okay. The friend told Tanya the friend that doesn't want to be identified, told Tanya to get the little boy checked out of the hospital. This friend even offered to take them. But Tanya said no. So this woman was ready to help, ready to take this boy to the hospital. But Tanya must have known how far it had gone. I don't know how she thought she would cover it up. She wasn't the mother. People knew where the child was. But it's not like she's the brightest spark. Just before 3 p.m., she was dropped off at home. She and David then decided to try and revive Moko. Tanya supposedly gave the boy mouth to mouth while David picked up their children from school. But at 3 p.m., Tanya called 111. She told the operator, Moko fell from a wood pole yesterday. He sustained severe bruising, but had been okay up until now. By now, Moko's stomach was so hard to the touch, it was like bricks. When paramedics arrived just minutes later, they found little Moko lying face down in the hallway. Face down, but she tried CPR. How do you do CPR if you're face down? Tanya was kneeling by his feet. The paramedics took one look at Moko and they scooped the little one up from the floor and they rushed him straight to the emergency department where he soon succumbed to the injuries he received during that prolonged abuse. His eyes were so swollen the nurse couldn't even lift his eyelids to be able to check his pupils. His little body was cold. So cold that devices used for measuring body temperature could not be used. It wouldn't take a reading. He had bite marks on his face and his tummy was protruding unnaturally and he was covered from head to toe in both bruises and abrasions. Postmortem examination established that the toddler died as a result of multiple blunt force traumas. He had lacerations and hemorrhaging deep within his abdomen, historic bruising and damage to his bowel. Combined, that resulted in his bowel rupturing and fecal matter leaked into his abdomen, causing septic shock. So if it wasn't the blunt force trauma that was going to kill him, it was going to be the internal injuries because you can't survive that. You don't survive bowel rupture because your body cannot handle having the secretion in there. His brain was swollen. He had blood clots under his scalp representing numerous injuries inflicted at different times leading up to his death. There was also evidence that the toddler had been smothered. His body was a map of torture. Moko had human bite marks, contusions, abrasions, deep bruising, lacerations, patterned injuries on his face, chin, neck, ears, lower lip, gums, eyes, ribs, testicles, skin, chest, tummy, shoulders, and arms. When they say he was covered top to toe, they meant it. This child went through hell. And I can't believe he lasted as long as he did. After Moko died, his mother revealed that her 7-year-old daughter had been witness to the abuse. So the sibling that was with Moko, while his mother was at the hospital with the eldest. She'd try and stay home from school to try and feed my son because they were starving him, Nicola Moko's mother told reporters. The 7-year-old, who cannot be named, told Nicola she had begged Tanya and David to stop abusing her baby brother. She said, "He wasn't talking, Mummy. I tried to tell David and I told Tanya he's not talking and he needs to see the doctor. And they wouldn't listen, Mummy." She said he was locked in the bathroom for 2 weeks and that she tried to use toilet paper to wipe his bleeding eyes. She tried everything to save him. She was told to tell the police that she was the one that hurt Moko. But the little girl was also used as a punching bag. She said Tanya used to punch her in the face when she'd smile and drag her by the hair to get to school. They brainwashed her, they psychologically screwed her, and made her partake in the violence. If she didn't, she was told by Tanya that she would kill her parents if she said anything about the abuse towards Mirko. To make matters worse, family members were told murder charges were no longer going to be pursued. The Crown Prosecutor and the defense attorney agreed to a guilty plea of manslaughter for the pair. A family member said the Crown Prosecutor explained because Mirko wasn't killed on the spot, but because his ruptured bowel was what killed him, it wasn't murder. I think if you take a life, it should be murder, not manslaughter. While the family understands nothing will ever bring back Mirko, getting some sense of justice will go some way to relieving the grief. In 2017, with news of an inquest being held into the toddler's death, the family members were hopeful that people who did not speak up during the initial trial would speak up, and that the ones that needed to be held accountable would receive punishment. There was a lot of people involved in this. There was social workers, once again dropping the ball, like the Fernandez case. I couldn't believe it. They just got let off the other day. There's never going to be a change until we change these laws. It's never going to change. People are going to continue to get away with this. And those social workers should be classed as murderers as well. That's just my opinion. The inquest started in 2017, in late 2017. Nicola talked about the domestic violence she suffered in her relationship with Moko's father.
Organize all your personal information, your ID, money, any identification that you will need in the future. Have an emergency plan. There's also an app available now that you can have a screen cloud over it for those type of situations. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be ashamed of it. It's something that I'm still accepting. It's something that I didn't want to be sharing with the courts. Something I didn't want to talk about until my biography in 2025. But unfortunately, it's come forward earlier, and I don't want anybody else to look at me as any weaker than what I have portrayed in trying to help families in domestic violence. I'd also like to say, when you leave, don't look back. Keep going. Don't give up on your dreams. Get that career. Get that education. Go to uni. It's all possible after everything you've gone through. I'm living proof. So I'll have to say so.
She made an emotional plea to others in similar situations to leave and never go back. Nicola went on to say that if the authorities had concerns about her children and had known something was going on, why didn't they go? Why didn't they find her? They knew where she lived. She was in the system as a carer, by the way. As a carer, not sure about the rest. But shouldn't, I don't know, he's gone to prison and you let him come back. I mean, I believe that the only time you should let someone that's gone to prison come back to live with you is if it's your husband that killed a pedophile. That you wait for with open arms, but a lot of other things. Nicola said they did not once contact the Auckland DHB social workers that work at Starship Hospital to gather evidence about me and my background for the investigation. If they had, they would have been notified by the Auckland DHB social workers and my Mirko would still be alive. Mirko's grandmother also gave evidence at the inquest and she asked various agencies why had they not listened to her concerns. She said, please tell me why no one bothered to check on them after a complaint was made against the mother, Tanya, just to ensure their well-being. Justice Katz said that while the court accepted that there were a range of reasons Tanya and David struggled to cope with their circumstances, other families in similar situations did not brutalize and kill their children. or children in their care. While the Crown identified Tanya as having a higher level of culpability, the judge said that the differences in culpability were minor, as both assaulted Moko continuously and encouraged each other as the offending escalated. The judge said, quote, "You both assaulted Moko continuously and encouraged each other as the offending escalated. You embarked on a joint campaign of violence against a defenseless and extremely vulnerable child. The offending was extremely cruel and callous, with neither of you seeking medical help for Moko while he lay dying." She said the pre-sentence reports indicated David had very little remorse, if any, and Tanya had shown little insight into her offending. David tried to shift the blame onto Moko and his mother, as well as social services. It has been concluded that Tanya is either in denial of the gravity of her offending or does not have much insight into her offending. Moko's family cried as the judge went over the grueling details of the toddler's death. His mother sobbed as judge described David rubbing feces into Moko's face. She then had to leave the courtroom. Moko's father, Jordan, yelled to the crowd outside the courthouse as he was leaving. "At the end of the day, justice will prevail," he said.
"Got anything to say today about the 17 years?
Nah, nothing.
Your offending involved extreme violence that was prolonged, repetitive, and gratuitous.
In my opinion, these killers should have received more jail time. 17 years for taking a life of a 3-year-old boy simply isn't enough. There needs to be higher punishment across the globe. Or else these people, they really do believe, that's all right, I can kill this kid and I'll be out in 20 years. I can kill this kid, I'll be out in 15 years. It doesn't matter. There's no recognition of culpability. They don't care. And the only ones that do show remorse, usually that remorse is, well, it's mistaken for poor me. There's no remorse. When they're crying, it's always, oh my God, I'm gonna live for however many years behind bars. There's no remorse for what they've done. It's always for themselves, always.
His body.
While he was resting in his coffin, I wanted to see the damage, mate, that you guys inflicted on such an innocent, small, young human being. I could only go as far as his eyes. And that haunt will haunt me.
Moko's mother delivering a powerful impact statement to Shayla, her former friend and Haerewa.
I couldn't even recognise my son when I arrived at Starship. When he arrived, sorry. It was simply horrific.
Nicola Dalipucky said the awful cruelty her son went through, repeated bashings causing a ruptured bowel and head trauma, will haunt her forever.
I would take the beatings, the horrific abuse that they gave my son. I would take being kicked and bit. I would take all the torture if that would have saved Moko's life, but I can't. Moko is lost to me forever.
She said the pair had never apologised or shown remorse, and she pleaded with the judge for a lengthy sentence.
They do not deserve mercy. They offer no mercy to my son who suffered at their hands.
To make matters worse, the fact that they could be eligible for parole after 9 years of serving their sentence. 9 years. You beat a child to death, you can get out in 9 years. That's even worse. Anyone that can harm an innocent child in such a way should receive the death penalty. Make sure you tune in a little later on. There will be a new video going up on 8-year-old Cherish Periwinkle. Holy cow, people. Yes, I've known about this case since it happened, but it's not until now that I have actually done the background on the mother, and it is messed up. Her children were taken off her and she was given an amount of time to straighten herself up to be able to get them back, and she never did that. Now her kids, Cherish's siblings, live in Australia. They've actually moved to Queensland, I think. And if you listen to the 911 tapes, which I will play segments of in that video, it makes your blood boil when you listen to her. And I know that I shouldn't cast judgment, but, well, and it's just so frustrating. It's so frustrating. So now I am going to leave you with a short clip of Moko's mother, Nicola, describing the little boy in only a way the mother can. Have a great day, guys, and I will be back very soon. Bye.
His beautiful innocent, his purity, his smile, his innocence. What all babies are innocent, you know? I want them to remember his smile as the beginning of the ugly ending. It's an absolute blessing to know that my son, Moko Saviour, you know, he has served a big, big purpose in his life. His name would not go in shame or in vain. He's starting the evolution from what I believe of changing things, changing this world, or starting with Aotearoa. It's amazing. I'm blown away. I thought, you know, all this time I was crazy. You know, he's me, he's us, me and my lawyer, and he's this, you know, this big corporate fighting a monster. But having the support of over 140,000 people, it's amazing. He's mommy's boy. He's very, very outgoing, very, very energetic. Always surprising. Always doing things that other kids don't do. Yeah. Going out of bounds. Singing to me. Always wanting to play. Always wanting to dance. 11 o'clock at night, don't want to sleep. Toddler in his nappy, get up on the bed, shake. It's not sleep time, mummy. She was supportive. She was happy. Yeah, she portrayed to be so happy. She portrayed to be a good mother. She portrayed to be stable mentally. She portrayed to be a real friend from what I thought. No, in the morgue, that was just more shock. That was like, you know, you get one blow. I like to spar MMA. You get one blow, you dodge it, you're fine. I didn't dodge it. I was down on the ground, and then that one just knocked me out, seeing my son in the morgue. I wasn't allowed to touch him. It was behind glass, and yeah, I lost the plot again, not understanding, because I didn't say what had actually happened to my son or how he had died. They just know they needed to do the autopsy, etc. And when I saw him, you know, I couldn't even recognise my son. Stop. Can you stop? I love you, my queen. And I love you, my king. And I promise, I told you, I promise. Mummy will keep fighting. Keep fighting to get back to you. I promise my babies. With every last breath, mummy's gonna make her way back to you. Aroha nui ki a kōrua e. Te ki aroha e mami nā here.